This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pro Farmer. Pro Farmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. As we prepare to plant this year's crop, margins are tight, and it may be difficult to pencil a profit this year, and perhaps for some time ahead. Where should you cut costs, and where should you invest in inputs? Ken Ferry helps us evaluate those decisions. Plus, we discuss unseasonably warm weather in most parts of farm country and keys to keep in mind for those considering earlier than normal planting. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and is brought to you by Pro Farmer. Start making confident marketing decisions with Pro Farmer. Pro Farmer's condensed style is designed to save you time while giving you important information you need when making those important marketing decisions. You'll stay on top of profit opportunities with Pro Farmer's mobile sell alerts and easy-to-use mobile app. With spring planting just around the corner and a new crop ready to go in the ground, now's the perfect time to begin a free trial. Just go to tryprofarmer.com. That's tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today. If you're like me, it felt like you could plant corn and soybeans in February this year, and the soil conditions might have allowed it. I began this week by asking Ken Ferry with Crop Tech Consulting in Hayworth, Illinois, about some of the keys to keep in mind as we prepare to plant our crop this year. But we spent much of our time on an even bigger topic, how to pencil a profit, and perhaps a profit in coming years with grain prices relatively low while using enough inputs to grow a good yield. Where should you cut expenses? Where's the best place to spend money if you have to make a choice? Ken provided several key things to consider this spring and beyond. Ken Ferry joins me, and Ken and I usually visit about this time every year thinking about the crop season ahead. Ken, thanks for taking time to visit, and perhaps we should start with the weather, because just about anywhere you're at, the weather has been warm. Some guys could have thought about planting in February, I think, in the Midwest, as warm it has been. So I might just start there. If things hold this way, people are looking to plant maybe earlier than they ever have. In Northwest Missouri, where I'm at, I heard somebody planted 20 acres of corn on March the 10th, I think just for the fun of it. But what things should we be keeping in mind if this weather holds and we stay warm and perhaps dry wherever we're at?
You know, and that, yeah, I think the warm and dry part is what gets the natives restless as far as trying to get out there and do something in the field. And there's multiple things you can do, right? One is planting, like you're talking about corn, soybeans, that type of thing. You know, from a planting side, definitely soybeans are more forgiving. And we know there's a pretty big premium to planting soybeans early. Corn, on the other side, is not so forgiving. So if the weather turns, even if we get it up, it's a matter of how many plants do you get up, how uniform are they, how many ears do you got. So I think it'd be pretty risky, other than making sure you got a planter running and that type of stuff, for our latitude to be in there and planting corn. I do know there's some beans planted in our neighborhood as well. It's probably early for beans, but that would carry less risk than planting the corn. Probably the other side of that equation is getting the land ready, getting the ground ready for planting. So guys are entertaining putting their herbicides on, putting their weed and feed programs together, and maybe leveling these fields up. And that's probably where some caution needs to be. I know some of our guys out in Iowa are leveling ground, and actually it's in good shape, meaning that it can level without putting in any compaction. Right here locally, between some of the rains that we've picked up, it wouldn't be in such good shape. So if we were out there even yesterday before the rain trying to level some of these fields, we probably could be putting in compaction. And 80% of the service calls that I go on in June, July dealing with compaction, they happen with this pass that's about to happen right now, where everybody's kind of jumping the gun, wanting to do something because the weather's so nice. You know, so making sure that if you're going to do tillage out there, that you're not putting in wheel track compaction or horizontal compaction is a big factor. That involves, you know, getting off the tractor and doing a little digging, right, to see what kind of moisture content you got. Will it hold the tractor? Will it smear in that field? So I think some mistakes can be making, can be made right now that are just going to keep on giving all season long. If you push the gun too much. Now, again, each field is different. So your neighbor shouldn't set this tone for when you go to the field, because he may have better drainage. He may have better tolerance for compaction. You should be checking each field, and you should be checking each soil type within the field, your low-lying ground. Don't just check the knob on the hill and say, yep, it's ready, let's go. If you, especially if you're doing horizontal tillage, when we're talking about horizontal tillage, it's putting in a layer of compaction. When we're talking about vertical tillage, it's talking about wheel tracks and those wheel tracks that kind of show up in the cornfield, bean field all season.
Is the main thing just patience on that, that we just, even though things are maybe warm, we just have to have a little patience to let that ground get in a little better condition so we don't cause problems down the road?
Yeah, I think it takes two things. It takes patience, and then it takes the willingness to go check every field before you start. You know, a rule of thumb what we use to try to get away from compaction, for instance, if I'm running a soil finisher and I'm running it, 4 inches deep, I want to dig in that soil down to about 5 inches and ball that soil up in my hand. And if it'll make a ball, then I try to see if it'll ribbon between my thumb and forefinger. If it will ribbon and that ribbon gets longer than an inch, you're most likely going to put in compaction if you till it that day. Situation, if it crumbles and won't ribbon, you're about the right moisture level not to put in a compaction layer. And that would go for high-speed disc as well. You know, if you're only running it 2 inches deep, you're probably less likely to find that same kind of moisture as you would down at 4 or 5 inches, but it's still a rule of thumb that would be good to use. So, again, like I said, and we got some guys leveling ground at different places, and it's fit. The ground could be leveled and ready to go, and planting into a sterile seed bed is pretty sweet. So a situation where get that field leveled up and get it ready. It's a little safer in a vertical environment than it is in a horizontal environment. But if you go out there now and put in a compaction layer, even though you got a sterile seed bed, you're gonna have to deal with that layer pretty much through the whole season from here on out.
I know that a lot of folks in your area and maybe that you work with do tillage, but in our area there's no-till, and I'm suspecting you have some no-till around you. Any thoughts just as far as that? So that ground, you may not be going over it at all. You're going to go straight in with the planter. What about planting early with in the no-till situation?
So there again, when we're no-tilling, there's quite a bit of no-till and lightly touched vertical till around here. There you do have to have patience, right, that the planter is doing the job that you want it to do, and you're getting the furrow closed, getting good seed-to-soil contact. There's a huge difference, though, between soybeans and corn. So in our research trials, we can go out and be planting soybeans in some what almost marginal conditions to wet, right? And as long as we got a good seed coat or a seed treatment on there to protect them, these early planted beans that will stick in the end of March, first part of April, not uncommon for them to be in the ground 20 days, before they get out. So you don't do that with a naked seed. But you can push conditions a little bit. And I hate to say that on a basis that you're kind of giving everybody license to push beans, but boy, you push corn in a marginal conditions and it just doesn't work out well. So scenario where we do a red light, yellow light, green light with our guys on planting corn, right? If it's wet and you're smearing the sidewall, it's always a red light, no matter what the temperature is. If you're mudding corn in, it better be for crop insurance reasons and not for production. But then you have the issue of seed chilling. So we stick corn in the ground when it's below 50 degrees. You can chill that seed and you get a lot of misfires. Those plants don't make it out. So they corkscrew in the ground and you lose that plant. And then you also have the loss of your spike down plant. So a percentage of your plants are planted spike down. The spike has to make a circle around the seed and come back to the surface. That could be 48 hours in warm soils. That could be 2 weeks in cold soils. So if you're planting today and the temperature is cold and the forecast is to stay cold, you could lose seed chilling plants and you could lose the ears on your spike down plants. Some cases, like last year, we had a freak warm-up where we could plant without seed chilling, But the temperature forecast was going in the tank for the next 10 days, and that would get you around seed chilling, but you're going to have to deal with spike down plants not making it out. So that's kind of what we call yellow light. Or it's cold and you want to plant today, but the forecast really looks good for the next 10 days. So planting in those cold soils, when we talk about seed chilling, it's the 48 hours from the time you planted forward. So it's not, I'm planting on Monday, it's going to warm up on Friday. That seed imbibes that water in the first 24 to 48 hours. And if that water is below 50 degrees, the seed won't expand like it would, or it won't be pliable. And it'll shred the cells when it expands in there. And that's what causes the seed chilling. So again, a yellow light, you could lose, if you plant in cold soils, you could lose to seed chilling, but you won't lose to your spike down plants. And you don't have to pay that much attention to that in soybeans. I mean, soybeans, if you're getting what you think a decent cover on that seed, good closure, you can push those conditions. And we've had so many beans snowed on, frosted over, and everything else, and they still rock on through. Doing that with corn, it's usually going to cost us bushels. So that holds true in no-till and conventional till. The temperature and conditions of planting, and you have to be patient in no-till, you know, to make sure that you don't get sidewall smearing and those kind of issues.
Do you have anybody, you mentioned the spike down, do you have anybody that has the planter where the seed placement, so we plant it so that we have all of those seeds the right direction, so to speak, so we don't have to wait the 48 hours for it to make the curve and come up?
I don't have anybody that I know of. Now, we did test a planter for a company that did that, and that was kind of impressive. But since then, I haven't seen where it went to, meaning that we ran it here 1 year, and we were then able to follow up with stand counts, emergence, and that type of stuff. And when they figure that out, I think it'll help us a bunch, because we don't have to worry about those spike down plants. So scenario where if we get it planted, we take one of those spears away.
Yeah, yeah. One other question on no-till before we change subjects here. This morning I was having a conversation with someone, and how many people now in a no-till situation are taking those corn stalks and processing them somehow in the fall? And there's a lot of different things out there. Any thoughts on whether it is better to do something in the fall to somehow beat those up, chop them up, or just leave them standing? What are you finding out there? Is there one preferred method if you're going to be planting in the standing corn stalks?
And I assume we're talking about no-till and soybeans into those stalks.
Right, yeah. Right.
And you're right. We do have customers that will run a vertical till tool on them in the fall. Some of them will use, of course, the stalk stompers and stuff on the head to get them flat, and then maybe run it in the spring. Some will only run it in the spring. Some will run it in the spring and the fall. So there's a lot of variables to it, and I could get a number of customers that would line up and testify that, yep, that's what you want to do. We get better emergence, better stands if we just touch those stalks and size them in the fall or the spring before we plant. On our side, we do that in our test plots, and we do see a little bit better emergence, a little stronger stand. Boy, but it is tough to get the ROI on that. Soybeans are so ornery in that way. So we improved the stand 10, 15%. That doesn't mean anything when it comes to bushels in the tank at the end. But in some cases, if you were to do a little bit of that in the fall, it may make it easier to plant earlier in April, but it doesn't guarantee that either. So I understand the practice, and we got a lot of guys that are doing it and really like it. My job is to figure out what's the ROI on that. When we do side-by-side trials, we're still struggling. You know, we can't be neutral. You got to pay for that pass, right? You got to, it's just like cover crops or anything else. You can't get into neutral in yield doesn't mean that you made any money in that process.
I'm sure you're having a lot of discussions right now, given commodity prices, margins are tighter. Maybe we'll leave this general to open up with. Just talk about the conversations, because if people are looking at tighter margins, they're probably having a discussion of where can I save a little money. So is there a certain place I begin that conversation of where I'm going to try to save money but still keep my yield the best it can be?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the topic that comes right to the top now as you're talking with customers, and where can I shave some dollars from that scenario? And some of that starts right at the seed, right? You know, what if I move away from my traded seed? What if I I go with a VT Pro, or what if I go with nothing? So a non-GMO, can I do that and not put an insecticide on the planter? Can I do it with seed treatments? Those are the kind of discussions that are definitely being had right now. And then the concept is, you know, what if I go to non-GMO? So last year, being the driest June or ninth driest June on record, we had a lot of wide row beans that didn't close, and then we had a lot of weed messes in our non-GMO beans. So some of those guys are thinking, well, I need to get out of non-GMO or narrow up my rows, kick up my population, but I got to manage these weeds. Where other people now are in the transition, well, maybe I need to look at that. That premium didn't mean that much to you when you had a $14 ahead of the soybeans and $7 ahead of the corn, but now you're getting more and more discussion on where we could get a non-GMO contract this time of year and what difference that would make. How you manage your herbicides becomes a big part of that, right? Especially if you're in wide row. So narrow row soybeans are a lot easier to manage weed pressure on. Seed treatments, and my advice is, you know, this is probably not the time to try something new. This is probably not the time to invest $15, $20 in a biological you've never tested before, or to try some off-brand seed corn that you've never tried before. You need to stick with the tried and trues, which you know are going to perform for you. Nothing wrong with testing all that stuff, but at the same time, just buying something because it's $60 a bag cheaper and you kind of check the box, I lowered my seed. You know, you got to buy products that are going to perform for you. And sometimes in the fertility side, guys say, well, what I want to do is, you know, cut or remove my fertility cost and put a biological in to make up that difference. Without testing it on your own farm, I'm going to say that's dangerous. You know, I would stick with, use a good soil test to help you guide where you could pull back on fertility if you need to. Most people already have that decision made, and fertility's on, they're locked and loaded, ready to go. So that, you know, trying to reduce the cost from here on out is, do I do a fungicide or not? Do I do an insecticide or not? Well, some of those things you can buffer by scouting. Last year, for a lot of our acres, we couldn't find disease. We were too dry in June when most diseases get fired up. So by the time July and August come around, the disease pressure for a lot of these fields was no surprise that we did not see a big response to fungicides because we just didn't have the pressure there. And that's one way to manage this disease pressure is buy the hybrid, and is it susceptible or not? Do I need to protect it? And then have somebody scout in that field.
You mentioned fertility there. I think a lot of nutrients have already been put on because of the weather we've had. I talked to a lot of co-ops now and others, and they say, hey, we're about done when we normally wouldn't be. So maybe the fertility conversation has changed. But in general, is it dangerous if I begin to look at cutting in the fertility area as one of the places I'm going to cut? Or maybe it just depends a lot on each particular farm, because I think all of us begin to look at, okay, which area am I going to begin to cut in? Is it seed? Is it herbicides? Is it fungicides? Is it fertility? To me, the fertility is the one that scares me the most in cutting, but I'm curious what you would say.
Yeah, and again, if the farm has been taken well care of and it's got good fertility levels, there probably is room to tap the brakes a little bit on the P and the K. You can't do that too many years in a row. So, and most of that's already on. So looking forward, say, could I pull back on my P and K in the 2025 crop? Yep. A soil test will tell you that. And that's a very good possibility. Pulling back on your N rate, that's another possibility, but you need to be efficient with the N. So if you're going to pull your N rate back, we know from a lot of nitrogen trials, right? If you don't hit the right N rate, everything stops. Everything you invested in the seed can stop. So if you're going to reduce your N rate and you're not, for instance, side dressing or doing some wide dropping or something like that, maybe you have to add that into the picture to say, okay, I'm going to reduce it, but I'm going to split my N application up in that scenario. Kind of the same way with when you're taking your traits, you know, off of the corn is what are you going to use to defend yourself from rootworm, corn borer, or whatever? If they show up, you're going to have to do something with that. But when it comes to fertility, nitrogen's a big one. If you skimp on that too hard, you'll shut yourself down pretty quick. P and K, it'll just lower the values on the farm long before it would ever affect the yield from that scenario. But nitrogen is the one that you really need to be careful with.
in tight times, is there one area that we tend to overlook and we shouldn't be skimping on, or some things that you'd always caution producers about in tighter times that, hey, we still need to be doing this?
You know, and let's say tight times is a 3 or 4 year stretch, right? Well, we could be looking at that right now, right? As we talk about farm cycles on a 7 year cycle, 7 years from peak to peak, valley to valley, and we're headed into that valley now. One of the areas you really don't want to back up on is soil pH. Keep your pH in that optimum range. That keeps the biology and the soil working for you. That keeps the microbes doing their thing and releasing nutrients and that type of thing. So while we tend to put limestone on the back burner, and that's one thing that can quickly be dumped out of the program, it probably needs to be more front and center. Now, hopefully, your fertility and your pH are in good shape coming into the valley. That's one of the reasons what you want to keep it there. But they say, well, let's cut all the limestone out for 3 years. I probably wouldn't do that. That'd be the first place that I would hold my own there. And the other side, of course, is weed control. How cheap can you get in weed control? That if we get an outbreak of weeds in there that like water hemp, that's a gift that keeps on giving for multiple years. So a scenario where, from a weed control standpoint, it's probably not the place to cut rates and try to pull back unless you're really confident in your scouting skills and what you have for weed pressure.
We talked N, P, and K there. Micronutrient-wise, are there some things to be aware of that I may not want to skip or skimp in the micronutrient area on either corn or beans?
In the micronutrient area or secondary nutrient, one would be sulfur. We tend to deal with more and more sulfur deficiencies today than we did 10 years ago and definitely 15 years ago as the sulfur levels continue to deplete in the soil. In our studies, if we're using sulfur ahead of our corn crop, we tend to do pretty good without sulfur ahead of the beans, meaning there's some carryover in that sulfur program. But that would be one element that if it's not in your program, probably should be. And if it's in your program, that's one I probably wouldn't cut out. And most of our starter goes on with a good zinc source because of the phosphate that we're putting on with the starter. Beyond that, you have to be very careful with micronutrients because you can spend $15 to $25 on micronutrients and not get a response in yield. So It's again, depending on the sandier soils have more of a response, the heavier soils have less of a response. So some tissue testing and soil testing together can help you kind of weather through that process. But micronutrients in general, this plant will usually tell you if it's deficient in boron or sulfur or something like that. You'll see some visual symptoms that you know can react to. But just throwing it out there, hoping to pick up another 10 or 15 bushel because you saw it in an ad somewhere, that's probably not the case for a lot of the micronutrients.
Ken, as we wind up, any other things on your mind as we head into this season, a warm season, a season with tighter margins? We've discussed those things, whether it's that or something else on your mind as we get ready to head out and plant.
I would say in tight seasons, you really need to buckle down and pay attention to the fundamentals. So let's not work these fields wet, put in a compaction layer that wipes us out before we start. That kickoff of the planting season, spend some time on your knees behind that planter, make sure it's doing what the monitor says it is. Once that crop comes up and the stand is shoddy, there's not much we can do about it, you know. So right now is a great time to be conditioning those corn planters, right? Disc openers and bearings and parallel bars and closing wheels, all those fundamental pieces that need to be in place to make sure there's no hiccups coming out of the gate. Last year, we're as dry as we were in the spring. I saw some hiccups at the corn planter that I thought were old problems long solved, but guys didn't have tail wheels lined up, didn't have bushings taken care of, stuff like that. So pay attention to the fundamentals. Worry more about them maybe than extras that you could add on trying to save yourself or push your bushels, you know. A little bit more attention to detail in a year like this can really make a difference.
Ken, I appreciate the time as you head into probably your busiest season, so I wish you well.
Yep, we're about to get kicked off in a lot of different ways, so it's amazing how fast it comes around.
Thanks for joining me on this week's show. Remember, you can follow Farming the Countryside and our daily show, American Countryside, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and you can follow myself on LinkedIn, and you can get updates from both of those programs there. And remember, you can hear these shows in a variety of ways at farmingthecountryside.com, on many local radio stations, or your favorite podcast platform. If you miss one of our shows, just use those platforms to go back and catch other topics of interest as well. We try to have a variety of guests providing many topics across the ag industry and rural America. It feels like it's about planting time here in Northwest Missouri, but I suspect we're still a couple of weeks away. We'll keep you updated on our progress. I appreciate you joining me. I'm Andrew McRae. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. This edition of Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today.